Ranchers, Stillwater, Oklahoma, and Rogers State have in common? Today we chat with local veterinarian Dr. Tracy Patton to find out. Don't stay on the porch. Come run with the big dogs here on this episode of Locally Home. Welcome, everybody, to Locally Home. I am Travis Peck, your host for today and your alumni director here at Rogers State University in Claremore. I am joined in the studio here at RSU Radio 91.3 FM by local legend. Is that accurate? Local legend seems maybe a bit of a reach, but maybe not. Dr. Tracy Patton, welcome into the show.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Patton, this is the conversation I was going to have before we got on the mics, but we're going to have it now. I just had a conversation at lunch. You are a veterinarian. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So I always say veterinarian because I'm from rural Claremore, Oklahoma, I guess. But veterinarian is not really a word, is it? It's really veterinarian.
Yeah, right? Correct. Well, I mean, when you're talking, it's a word.
It sounded like a word, right? If I say, oh, yeah, he's a veterinarian, it sounds, I don't say veterinarian, like I don't.
Right.
This is good content so far, I'm just saying.
So, you know, hooked on phonics.
I should learn how to speak the English language is what I guess my point is going to be.
Well, you and, you know, probably 98% of the other folks out there, because
right.
That's just a common.
It's just an easy way to say it. It's kind of the whole realtor, realtor.
And then we have people that cut to the chase with vet.
Vet.
Are you a vet?
Right.
Which gets very confusing when they're talking about a veteran's discount and those types of things. So, you know.
See? And that was the other thing I talked about. Probably most people just say, we're taking our dog to the vet. They don't
right.
say, we're taking our dog to the veterinarian.
Yeah, that's
see,
a lot.
Like too many syllables
that's
for
a
me.
Lot.
But anyway. Well, so Dr. Patton is joining us here today. Tracy, if you will, I mean, to your good friends, which we are not. I mean,
yeah, both of them call
both
me that.
Both of your good friends, that's good. Let's talk about Claremore. You're born and raised here.
Yeah.
Is that accurate, born and raised?
Well, raised.
Okay.
Raised. I was born in Oklahoma City. We moved here we moved here far enough back that the side streets were still brick.
Nice, okay.
Literally.
Yeah.
Main Street was paved, but there was Missouri, Cherokee, those cross streets were still brick. And I remember that because my dad was a manager for Goodyear, and that's how we ended up here. He got moved to the store here. It was on Missouri where Main Street Tavern is now.
Yep.
Previously, Senior Citizens.
Right.
Previously, Goodyear. And so when I was a kid growing up, I spent a lot of time down there, and so we'd be out in the street playing like idiots. So that's how I knew there were bricks.
Yeah, that's crazy. I knew that because, well— You know, some of the roads not so great around here. That happens. And there are some places where you can see some exposed brick.
Yep.
But so my mom is from Neodesha, Kansas, where they,
made the bricks.
So that's a really weird connection. But yeah, that's a thing. So you moved here as a small kid.
Right.
And
we moved here in 1969.
69. Okay. And then you went to Claremore High School and you were in the, well, see, what year did they switch over to the school? The quote-unquote the new school from the three-story.
Yeah.
Bridge.
So when I was in school here, the Will Rogers Junior High was 8th and 9th grade,
okay,
which was previously the high school.
Right.
And then the high school was 10th, 11th, and 12th.
Gotcha. Okay.
And it wasn't new, but it was fairly new.
Fairly new-ish. Yeah, I couldn't remember what year that it switched over. And
I have to
go back and look at that. But anyway, so Claremore High School graduate.
Right.
And you get out of high school, I'm sure, with a 4.0 GPA.
Well, we might need to move the decimal around a little, but that's okay.
Same. And then you decided to do what after high school? Tell us a little bit about that.
So, you know, this was at that point, Rogers State College.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an awards banquet at Claremore High School, and I was given a scholarship to the college here. Probably, you know, an act of desperation, I'm guessing. But anyway, I came up here for my first, I think about a year and a half. I was one of those that kind of faded out. And I got my basics taken care of. Some great, great instructors here. I had Dial Driver for my comp classes. I had Mrs. Lurs, who was here forever, humanities. I had Dr. Sargent, who boldly taught me chemistry 1 and 2.
Oh, nice.
A guy who had never had chemistry in ever. So barely passed biology in high school. But so I came up here, and got most of my basics out of the way. And I had worked for a veterinarian in high school and was wanting to head that direction. But at that point, I was just tired. I'm not an academic person. I am not a big reader. So
you thought, what thing takes the most school? And you decided to go that route. So you did not.
You know, conquer your fears, right? So anyway, I kind of veered off from there. I went on to do some other things. I worked on a ranch for a while. I worked in construction. I drove a semi for a while, hauling equipment from Parham Industries, which was here in town. They made grain carts, so I hauled those around to tractor dealerships. So I did a lot of different things, and then finally I evolved back around to deciding that it was time to go back to college and do what I wanted to do.
Buckle down, if you will, and go back to school. So you took your talents to Stillwater, correct?
Yes.
And
I would use the term talents very loosely.
Sure. But you headed that direction, and single at this time when you head to Stillwater?
Yes.
Okay. And then when we get to Stillwater, how did that go?
How much detail do you want?
Let's talk about the first party. No, I'm just kidding.
We can just skim across the highlights.
Tell me a little bit about that experience, because, let's see, so you were there in what year did you get to Oklahoma State?
See, I didn't know there was going to be test questions.
Sorry,
I'm going to say 89-ish.
Okay, so just post Barry Sanders.
Yeah.
But, you know, pretty close. You're getting right there, right? And you already knew you were going the veterinarian route. So, and you already had your basics out of the way. Did you just get to jump right into those classes?
No, there, no. There's requirements to apply to vet school. You have biochemistries, organic chemistries, two physics that I was able to make into three courses, those types of things. And so I had to take the rest of my basic requirements to meet the criteria for application to vet school.
And then, so once you got on that path, did you realize that you were for sure, like, that's what you wanted to do? I mean, did you know?
I felt pretty committed.
Yeah.
Time and financially.
Right.
So, you know, I had friends in undergrad that were like, well, if I don't get into vet school, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. And I don't know, I guess I painted myself in a corner because I was thinking, boy, if I don't get into vet school, I really don't know what I'm going to do next. So there was just kind of a self-imposed pressure.
Gotcha.
to get there.
Nice. And then, so you graduated Oklahoma State.
Yes.
And then where did you go from there? How did you get back to Claremore, Oklahoma?
I drove up Highway 412, like everybody else does.
Rude. That's just rude.
So we'll back up a little bit. So
yeah.
The way vet school goes, you know, it's a four-year program. I started, when you start your junior year, you're halfway on clinics, halfway in the classroom, and at the end of your junior year in May, you automatically start your senior year. There's no break, there's nothing. And your senior year is clinics all year till the following May. And so I had met a young lady, ironically, at a library. I may have mentioned I don't like to read,
nice.
And there's another story there, but we'll let that go for now. My wife, Rachel, she grew up here in Claremore as well, mm-hmm. and she was working as the assistant children's librarian at the Claremore Public Library. The children's librarian was my mom. And to this day, she claims that she wasn't trying to fix us up.
Mm-hmm.
We'll leave that there. But anyway, so I met Rachel, and we met in October of whatever year. And we started dating. We dated, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. We got engaged. And then it was the February before the May of me starting my junior year in vet school. So we had to make a decision if we were going to just continue to date till I got out of vet school, or if we were just going to go ahead and get married before my junior year, because there wasn't any place in between. And so she couldn't wait to be my bride. And so this is my story.
Counting down the days. She was just counting down. Yeah,
I'm going to make it my way. So
she's not here, and she may not listen to this. I don't know. But
she may not. So we went ahead and got married before my junior year, and so when I was done with vet school, mm-hmm. We not only were heading back to Claremore, but we had a new baby to bring back with us, and she was from here, I was from here. The vet that I'd worked for in high school had offered me a job to come back and work with him, so it just all came together, and that's how we ended back up in Claremore, Oklahoma.
Nice. And so how long after – well, you went to work for him then.
Mm-hmm.
And then how long after that did you take over?
So I came – we came back in 97, and I went and opened my practice in March of 99.
99. Okay. And then you ran that until just a few years ago.
Until 2018. Yeah. And I merged with a veterinarian, who Dr. Robert Kendrick, who had done relief work for me at, when I had my solo practice. I always tell everybody he and I met online, because we did. I mean, we would schedule him to work for me just through emails, and I never really saw him face to face until we started talking about merging our practices together.
Wow. And so then that became
Rogers County Pet Hospital,
which is located at
1201 North Lynn Riggs Boulevard. It's easier to say we're straight across from Goodwill and next door to Claremore Compounding.
There you go. That was good. Did you like that plug? I just fit that in there for you. No big deal. And you guys do what? Tell me what all that you guys offer there, speaking of, while we're plugging your place.
Yeah, we're general practice, small animal practice. There's Dr. Kendrick and myself and Dr. Bame, who's our associate. We pretty much offer all the general medicine, ultrasound. We have digital radiography, digital dental x-rays. We do dentistries. Dr. Kendrick is kind of our in-house surgeon, and he does orthopedics and soft tissue surgery. I got certified in canine rehabilitation in 2013 in Knoxville, Tennessee, at the University of Tennessee. And so I do rehab, or what we would call physical therapy, on the human side. We're not allowed to call that because the Oklahoma physical therapists have trademarked that term.
Don't much care for that. I see.
Wow. Okay. So we have to use physiotherapy, rehabilitation, which then it sounds like somebody's dog's been on drugs. I'm going to rehab your dog. So we offer that. Pretty much we have a groomer, and we do boarding. We do day boarding. Just a variety of services.
So you have been in that world for a while now, and as a result of that, your wife was a librarian, but then after she was a librarian, what did she do? Did she become a teacher after that, or?
She went from library work. When she came to Stillwater, she started becoming a case manager. She worked for, there was a foundation, Gateway Foundation. They used to have the big balloon thing. I don't know if they may still have it in Broken Arrow, but they had a living facility there, and so she was a case manager for some the physically, mentally handicapped folks that were residents there. And so when we came back to Claremore, she just kind of stayed on that same trek and went to work for a place out of Pryor doing case management work. Then she worked on the senior psych unit at the hospital when it was there. And then from there, went into education. And because of her extensive background in case management, she got certification in special ed.
Okay. So she was teaching special ed here in Claremore.
Right.
And what year did she venture off
to the Great North?
To the Great North, because that I remember that happening, but I didn't really know a lot about it at the time.
Yeah, so. So she'd worked. She was in SPED classes for probably 5 years, and then she went into regular classwork, still working on IEPs and those things with students. But August 2016 was her first year to go north to Akiak, Alaska, which is a isolated native community that you get there by, you fly to Anchorage. From Anchorage, you fly to Bethel. From Bethel, you get on Renfro's Alaskan Adventures and fly by bush plane to Akiak.
Wow. So population ideas on that of Akiak?
Akiak, like, well, when the teachers are there, it doubles. I think there was probably about 75.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Residents.
Jeez. So she decides to go there and teach, correct?
Right.
And so is that year round, or is that she was only there for
just for the school year?
Gotcha. And then came back to Claremore,
right,
during
for
the
summer.
Yep. Gotcha. So that's an interesting, I mean, I'm sure you've talked to the people about this in general, but you've been married for how long then? You've been married for?
Ever since the wedding.
Yeah, the wedding day. So that was,
We've been married 26 and a half years.
Okay, so that's a long time. I mean, that's
tell me, bro.
Awesome, by the way. No, yeah, and the best, I really hope she doesn't listen to this now.
It's been longer for her than it has been for me.
guaranteed that. She's a very lovely woman, and you're very lucky. No, but so you've been married for, at the time, I guess, then 20-something years, right?
Mm, right.
And she's like, hey, listen, I've had enough of this. I'm going to move to Alaska. Is that how that conversation went down?
That's one version.
But really, you had obviously had a conversation about it and decided was something that you both could do and wanted to do. So.
Well, yeah, we had some mutual friends. Charlie Burns, who was a teacher here and a principal at the junior high, and his wife, they had been teachers here in Claremore, and I'd known them for quite a while. And so he had approached multiple times years previous saying, you know, Rachel needs to come up here and teach. And so he was the principal at ACIAC.
Okay.
And he needed a English teacher and social studies. And so that's where kind of the tie-in came. And so he just hit us at a time when she was ready to do something different. Mm-hmm. And we said, well, it's 1 year. And you know, time just seems to go by faster and faster. So we're like, yeah, we can do 1 year. We'll see how it goes. Yeah. And there it just kind of built. This is her. She's not an ACIAC anymore. She just did that 1 year. There's a fun side story there, but she told me not to go down rabbit holes. So she was there for a year. Then she taught in Metlakatla, which is an island across from Ketchikan. A lot of people are familiar with Ketchikan because that's where most of the cruise ships stop there. Metlakatla is the only Indian reservation there in Alaska, and she taught there for 2 years. And now this year she's teaching in a community called Whittier, which is about 40 miles south of Anchorage.
Nice. Okay. So that being said, you also have children together, so we should probably mention that as well.
No, yeah, so, we have kids.
You have four kids?
Yes, she had a daughter that was 3 when we married, and then we've got 2 boys and a girl.
Nice. And they're all grown for the most part?
They are all legal adults and out on their own.
Nice, that's good. Well, so what did they think of Mom going off to Alaska to teach?
So, funny question there. Again, I think if I'm going to answer it honestly, they were more concerned about me being here by myself than they were about her.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And they were also concerned about what condition everything was going to be in when she got back.
Gotcha. That makes sense. I think I'd be in the same boat on that as well. Well, that's good, though. But so it was a family decision overall, obviously.
I know
you guys had that conversation. And then it's been working out. Clearly. And
yeah.
I know you've been up there a bunch, and we haven't gotten into that part yet, but.
Yeah, you know, it has. It's worked out. She just, Rachel feels like that it was kind of a calling to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. It's kind of her mission field. I mean, she's always considered all of her positions working with kids mission work, and it is. But for whatever reason, this was something that was strong on her heart. She's actually, she's a TU graduate. She's got a degree in anthropology.
Nice.
Which is her interest just naturally draw her to different cultures and different settings. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of why she embraces this work that she does up there with in the different school systems with a variety of students.
Yeah, that's awesome. So my wife is a first grade teacher, and I always joke that I try to get her to quit every year and, like, you know, get a CPA job or something, but she doesn't go for that because you can't argue the calling.
Nope.
Like, you can't,
yep. if it's in their heart, it's there.
It's totally there, and I'm thank goodness that it is, because
right.
It's definitely not in mine. So
mine either.
Right. There's other things that we're supposed to do. That's not it. So, okay. So she's in Alaska. You're a veterinarian. I'm going to learn how to say it eventually. I'll say it right.
Let's just go with vet.
You're a vet. You are certified in this non-physical therapy. What did you call it? Physiotherapy?
Sure.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, physiotherapy.
Look at that.
And so, as a result, tell me a little bit about how you ended up in a cabin in the woods in Alaska for a little race called the Iditarod.
Okay. So, her first year up there, she was an ACIAC. And ACIAC is very isolated. In the warm months, people can get from ACIAC to civilization either by bush plane or by the Kuskokwim River. In the wintertime, bush plane maybe, just weather dependent, mm-hmm. and the river becomes an ice road. You know, they've got the, some show Ice Road Truckers or something. Right, but right. And that they do. They just drive. When you're flying over in the wintertime, it's kind of cool because the river just looks like an expressway.
Wow.
Not that many cars because they don't have that many cars.
Right.
They have their snow machines and some people have trucks. But you can see down on the river where there's paths going in and off like exit ramps.
Oh, wow.
But so she was up there. I went up on a spring break, and I use the term spring break very loosely because it was our spring break, and it was just another day of winter there.
Right.
I think it was down like, I don't know, in the 20 below or something like
gosh.
That. And it's not bad until the wind starts. And when the wind comes off the river, then it's cold.
Really cold.
So we were up there. Akiak, other than the residents, there's a store. It's a co-op, a government-owned store. The school, post office, water treatment plant, and I think that is it. Oh, and the dump.
Got to have the dump.
Yeah, you got to have the dump. So that's all there is there. So when it's that cold outside, you just stay in your little prefab house.
And be there and... Yeah, there's not a whole lot to go out and
yeah.
do. You're not
yeah.
going to go
and, you
go
know,
for
they,
a run
they do.
Or...
They could get they got television. It's limited, mm-hmm. but they had TV. So she went up to the school. She'd got some books for me because, as I mentioned, I love to read.
Right.
And
love
so
books.
she got some. And there was one in there about the Iditarod. And so I just started kind of thumbing through it and learned a lot of interesting things. The Iditarod race itself, the commemorative race, and there's two schools of thought as to what that commemorates. There's the Surum Run that everybody talks about, but the other argument is that it was started just to keep the legacy of the sled dog alive.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it was started by Joe Reddington Sr. Joe Reddington Sr. is born in Kingfisher, Oklahoma.
I saw that. That's super interesting.
And
yeah.
so, and I've got to, I met his grandsons and his great-grandsons, and super, super family. But, so I got, that kind of piqued my interest. And so, as I read on through it, and I'd been into the physiotherapy stuff, these dogs are just amazing athletes.
Yeah.
And it was just incredible the things that they do. And so, it just, my interest just kind of kept on and kept on, and I finally decided... I don't know how, because I don't even know what's required, but I'm going to get into this somehow and get to work this race. And so I kept pursuing it. There's a lot of ins and outs and doors that got opened and things that occurred, but in the end, I got to go up and work. My first race to work was in 2020.
Nice.
So.
And so what does that entail? Well, I mean, let's back up. I mean, I know this is technically about you, and we're talking about Claremore, and right now we're in Alaska, but let's talk about the dogs for just a second, because I'm kind of a nerd in that I'll watch any documentary pretty much that you put in front of me, and I remember watching some about the Iditarod and those dogs and, like, the day, how long they run and how long they can run.
Oh, yeah.
It just blows your mind. Like,
yeah.
You know, I'm a guy that can barely jog a mile if I wanted to, and you've got these dogs that are running for days on end. At what speed? I mean, like,
you know, they'll average, they'll average 9 miles an hour. Sometimes they'll get up to 12. But on the average, and it depends on where they're at in the race.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing is extremely strategic. The mushers put an extreme amount of planning into their race. And then all the uncontrolled factors, mainly weather,
mm-hmm.
Come into play. And so then they just have to adjust accordingly. But on the average, those dogs will run about 9 miles an hour. They'll run up to 100 miles a day.
That's incredible. I mean, like,
yeah.
There's really nothing like that out there otherwise that I can think of that's even close to that.
You know, so. all the studies that have been done as far as athleticism in animals, mm-hmm. and recovery times and muscle density and da-da-da, all those boring statistics, pointing to these are like the top athletes.
Yeah. Well, that's so, and then that's something that you have to know, and you're working on these dogs when they come in, and I take it you're at a station along the race. Is that how that works?
Yeah.
out? And there's different stations along the way.
Yeah.
And I don't know how the ins and outs, obviously, but do they switch out the dogs at all? Like, is there one that moved to front to back? Like, I don't know how any of that works.
Right. Right. So kind of the dynamics, and there's so much that we couldn't even cover, but mm-hmm. big picture. So they start out, they can start out with up to 14 dogs. The dogs they start with are the dogs they have to finish with. And they may finish with less than 14, but they can't start with any more than that, and there's no B string, there's none of that.
Mm-hmm.
When they leave, so the race starts in Wasilla. and goes all the way to Nome, typically. Last year was an exception, and that's a whole other COVID conversation. But it's a relatively 1,000-mile race.
Yeah.
And so they start out with their team of 14 dogs, and they can. They can change the leads, and they can switch them around if they need to. They do what we call return dogs. If they come to a checkpoint and they have a dog that's limping, or they just have one that's just not feeling it and doesn't want to pull, and it's slowing the team down, then they'll give it to us. We'll do the paperwork. Planes come and pick these guys up.
Oh, wow.
Fly them back to either Anchorage or McGrath. Depends on where they're closest to. They have three different hubs. And the checkpoints, there's probably – it depends. There's a southern route and a northern route. And there's 30-some-odd, maybe 35 checkpoints. And depending on how they manage them, the demographics are just incredible, too, because you remove – at every checkpoint, you have your communications people, you have your veterinarians, you have what they call trail hands, which are helping handle the dogs. And the mushers will have drop bags at different checkpoints that has foods, may have different – sled covers depending on what kind of terrain they're getting ready to go into and those types of things. And so the head veterinarian, Stuart Nelson, he will, best that he can, kind of lay out a hop leapfrog type pattern of moving veterinarians from checkpoint to checkpoint to stay ahead of the race. But you also have to have veterinarians still at the pass checkpoints until the last musher gets through.
That makes sense, yeah.
So depending, and I think for this next race in March, they've got, they're up to around 50 or more teams that have registered. This is the 50th anniversary of the race, so it's a big deal. It's hoopla.
That's cool.
So everybody's trying to
get involved. So are you going again this year?
I am. I got invited back.
Congrats.
I don't know what that says about their needs there, but they invited me back anyway.
Sounds like you did a good job is what it sounds like.
We'll go with that.
Yeah, that sounds like what you did. Nice. Well, that's cool. So you go back to that. That'll be awesome. So then do you see that turning into something else? I mean, for you, like in the future, is that something you'd want to get into? Maybe be the lead vet someday?
No,
not for you?
Nope. Okay. You know, the thing that I embrace about the Iditarod, I mean, I love the dogs because they're so easy to work with. Mm-hmm. They're just used to being handled all the time, and you can do anything by yourself. You don't need somebody to help you. You can take their temperatures, you can do whatever, and they just let you. They just live with it because that's, you know, day to day, they're always handled. Mm. I think that the thing that I relish most is, so here I've owned my own practice for 20, however many years now, 20 some odd years. And so day to day, I'm making protocols and directing and making decisions. And when I get up there, and one of the reasons I think I make a good veterinarian for them is because I just do what I'm told.
Mm-hmm.
It's my vacation. I don't have to make a decision. I don't have to plan anything. If they tell me to go sit in that Arctic tent for the next 2 hours till the next team comes, I'll go do that.
Right.
If they tell me to go do this and I'll go do whatever. You know, I don't care. If I got to take a sled and 5 gallon buckets down to the river to bring water back because we're at an isolated cabin that has no water.
Yeah.
I'll go do it. It's whatever. It's a vacation for my brain to a certain extent.
That's good. That's always a good thing. I know a lot of us sometimes get into that. I don't have to get to manage people, however you want to look at that, I guess. And I know the people that do, and yeah, I never understood that checking out, except for that my wife, again, back to that being a teacher.
Right.
She's like, I just don't want to do anything, like where I don't have to think. I'm like, yeah, I get it. I can't imagine managing 20 children a day.
So, yeah.
But yeah, so you're a local business owner. Let's go back full circle here. We're back in Claremore. You're now, you know, you've been to Alaska. Your wife teaches there. Your children are doing well, I hope, in general. I mean,
they're all doing well. on their own. They all have thriving jobs. They're locally close. Owosso, Broken Arrow, Verdigris.
Awesome.
Here in town. So,
well, that's pretty good. So you've got a pretty good perspective from a local business owner / you know, Claremore alum, went to RSU, I mean, all of the things. So let's talk a little bit about Claremore and what it looked like maybe when you graduated high school to today. And again, I'm not trying to like call you out, but we might have had a conversation about this the other day. But I was born in 1982 and you graduated high school in 1984. So basically we're the same age is where I was going with that story. So anyway, that was just a little dig there. You can't see his face and you can't see what he's doing with
his
hand gestures.
Heck, I'm still trying to do the math.
But the world is different. I mean, you and I have watched over the last 10 or 15 years how Claremore's changed.
Right.
And I would argue for the better. What do you think the biggest changes have been, and how do you think that those are, you know, helping Claremore grow as a community?
I think the biggest changes have been the biggest change. I could almost roll this up into a singular one. The fact that we have evolved to a point now where we have a younger group, a younger initiative group, I think is how I would describe it. For so long, and not that things were done poorly, I'm definitely not qualified to quantitate that by any means, but we were the status quo. We stayed the status quo. You know, change is scary. And I don't care if it's on a personal level or a business level, community level. Change is a scary thing, and, you know, there's just inherent risk with it. And I think that for a while we were just comfortable in the community, and we just maintained. Didn't get any worse.
Right.
Didn't necessarily get a whole lot better. And now I think with Claremore Collective and some different folks on city council and different leadership, you know, I got to speak with John Ferry the other day, and I had a good conversation with him, and kudos to him and what he's been able to bring to us. Mm-hmm. And it's just overall the general direction. You know, it's like watching a stock. You watch investments, and they're jagged. They're going up, they're going down, they're going up, going down. But you're hoping for an overall climb. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we're at. I mean, yeah, we're finding some things that don't work and things that do. But I think our general climb is in a positive direction.
Yeah, I think, and I mean, medical field, right? Like you have to try things out. Sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. If you don't give it a run, you know, you're never going to know. So I just got to talk to Dr. Rice a little bit ago doing one of these podcasts, and we were talking.
What? I had to come up after Dr. Rice?
It was Dr. Day here on the podcast. But Dr. Rice was talking about, you know, growing up small town and getting out in the world and having those experiences that are beyond, you know, your little bubble, if you will. And I think, to your point, some of the people that are now in leadership roles are local, but they've been out in the world too. And so it's like,
right,
they see the possibilities, and there are some bigger picture things that can happen that, you know what I mean? That aren't as scary that way. Like,
right. Oh,
we can take those things from, you know, New York and Austin and bigger cities and try them here and see how it goes.
Sure.
So I think that one of the other things that I want to talk to you about was just growing up here. I mean, I've had conversations with people that are older than I am about, you know, growing up in Claremore and how John Ferry always says he wished he grew up here. And he's like, no, you know, nothing against where he grew up. But he said there's always this hometown feel here. Like, we have that Americana,
right,
you know, pretty good overall experience. And did you feel that way growing up here? I mean,
absolutely not.
You felt you didn't like anybody and you wanted to get out of here as soon as possible?
No, it wasn't that. It's just growing up, I didn't have anything to compare to.
Gotcha.
You know, I'm going to age myself here. Jerry Clower was an old country western singer comedian.
Okay.
And he told a story one time about his Uncle Cletus. His Uncle Cletus went into the feed store and ordered 6 bushel baskets of turnip greens. And the guy standing behind him in line said, what are you going to do with those? And he said, well, I'm going to feed those to my dog. And he said, well, my dog would never eat turnip greens. And Cletus said, mine wouldn't either for 3 months. So, you know, nothing to compare to.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have something to contrast to, then it's hard to appreciate. Now that I'm the age that I am, which is older than you.
Yeah. I've pointed that out at least 3 times so far.
and I've been places, and I realize that I was utterly grateful for the community I was raised in.
Yeah. That's a fair assessment. I like that.
I think that I took a lot for granted. And now, having raised my kids here, I have a greater appreciation for what Claremore has offered them and has had to offer them. You know, when you've lived here all your life, you get to hear all the negatives, and there's still plenty of those out there.
Sure.
I think some of us, we have a duty to point out the cream, because everybody else, there's plenty of people pointing out the challenges.
Yeah.
But I think there's an overall just positive attitude in this community, and it needs to be embraced more, and we just need to be more aware of it and definitely more appreciative.
Oh yeah, I think you're absolutely right, and there's always the naysayers, of course. I mean, that's where prior to this job, I obviously was co-running moreclaremore.com, and that was our whole goal, right? Let's just talk about the positive. Let's just talk about, let's not complain. And this, you know, and most people for the most part over our like 7 years, 8 years it's been around, they don't really go on there to complain too often. Like,
right.
They kind of know it's not the place. Like, there are plenty of options to go complain. And I think that what we talked about then was two things. It was big awkward hugs, okay? Let's mend some fences and bridge some gaps that might not have always been great. And we're going to big awkward hug it out and figure out how to make that better. And then the other thing was just making these connections, right? Because you said mentioned Claremore Collective Young Professionals Group here in town. We talk about Rogers State University. Of course, I work here and I went to school here, and I'm a proud alum and everything. But you know, people don't just shout it from the rooftops that they necessarily went to RSU or RSC or Claremore Junior College or, you know, whatever it was. But so many people we know in our day to day life went through here to some, you know, even if it was only for a year or two.
Yeah.
Depending on what you were doing, and it just made an impact or changed your path of what you were going to do. So,
yeah, I would look at that statement and on a personal level for me, and I was, and there's still teachers here in the community that are retired now, but they will attest to the fact that this guy was a C average on his best days. All right.
Right. Right.
And so I would tell you that, I would have to wonder where my path would have been or where I would have ended up if it hadn't been for that scholarship that,
right.
I mean, that is literally the reason I came up here to the Hill, was because the it was going to be free.
Small little outreach, right? I mean.
And so, you know, if I hadn't had that, because I can assure you at that age and that maturity level, I wouldn't have headed out to Stillwater or anywhere else.
Right. Well, see, I made that mistake. I don't know, you know, what you know about me, but I decided at the last minute to go to Stillwater because apparently that's what you're supposed to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got to go to college. I didn't have that plan. Well, I went to Stillwater and sometimes to class and sometimes not so much. So, you know, that's what happened. And it wasn't for me. Like, and that's the other part about Rogers State that, and I know this sounds like a Rogers State commercial, but it's really not. I'm just saying it's a small community, like here on the Hill even, right? So
yep.
you're not getting, again, nothing against Oklahoma State and 300 people in a, you know, freshman English class, but it's not the same thing as 20 people in a freshman, you know, like
no,
it's not the same.
Yeah, it's not.
And it's not for everybody. Like it's just, I think the point of all that is back to your saying that you coming here was because of that scholarship. It's just, it's so interesting the older I get and the more you look back at things to see how important something small can affect somebody's life. You know, that's the other thing is Maggie Froman was in here and I told her because she's younger than me by probably a bit. And I said, it's funny because I feel like I've watched her grow and I see all the steps and she's like, well, I'm glad you could see it because I could, you know, I couldn't
right.
see any of that. And I'm like, but that's, you know, I think that's just an age thing. Like, I think the more you have perspective and get to see those things. So what would you say after RSU, I mean, after RSC, right? Rogers State College.
Oh, gosh,
time,
there's
right?
been so many initials.
Yeah,
OMA, CJC, RSC, RSU.
84, right? Yeah, I think that's right. But anyway, after that, and then you go on to Oklahoma State, successful gentleman here in the community. What would you say one of your biggest accomplishments is, personally or professionally?
Biggest accomplishment?
For a C average student who wasn't going to go to college probably and, you know, like.
Well, my biggest accomplishment is just having married Rachel.
Yeah.
Because without that, everything else pales in comparison.
Nice.
So
now
I hope she listens to this.
No, I'll make sure she listens to this part.
But, you know, honestly, for me, that's the biggest, because whether you want to put it on a genetic family basis mm-hmm. or a community family basis or a church family basis, mm-hmm. there's nothing more important than family.
No, I agree. I totally agree with you on that. And that really is what community comes down to. You know, same for me, by the way. My wife has made me better every step of the way. I think probably you would, you know, say something similar.
Oh, absolutely.
That. And really it is. It's interesting because we have a senior here in high school now, and it's just blows my mind to see the community outreach and what family does, because, you know, that's what we've got to go by. Like, that's all you have every day. Is your family,
yep.
and you got to make the best and the most of it all. So, well, Dr. Patton, I mean, anything else you want to talk about? Because we could chat for a long time.
Oh,
if we had a beverage or two, we could have.
We would bore people to death, or at least I would.
No, not at all. Not at all. I think that's super interesting. I really appreciate you coming in today. So, Locally Home is the title of this, and the reason it's that is because, again, I'm local. And this is my home, and that's honestly what I came up with, and they let me name it that, so I did. But Claremore, Oklahoma is where we're recording this out of, 91.3 FM, RSU Radio, and Dr. Tracy Patton here in Claremore, Rogers County.
Pet Hospital.
Go check it out if you have all your veterinarian needs. See, I feel like I'm adding an extra syllable to that still, but anyway, it's fine.
You're coming along.
We're getting there. Someday, I'll get there. Communications major. Just want to point that out real quick. All right, well, thank you, Dr. Patton, for being here. Really appreciate it, and hopefully we'll come back sometime soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Locally Home here on the RSU Radio Podcast Network. Please subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. We hope to bring you more information about Claremore and Rogers State in the future. So, join us next time on Locally Home.